Welcome back to Smell You Later. It's another episode of your favorite podcast about scents and smells and...
What'd you say last week? Scents, smells, and boys.
No more boys.
Are boys done this week?
This week, yes.
Okay. It's funny, when we were starting the show, I was like, we need a tagline. Like, every podcast has a tagline to define the show and say what we're about. And Sip was like, we don't need a tagline. And now we're both in our feelings and everyone calls us a fragrance podcast. And it's like, well, had we had a tagline? But like, maybe it is like scents, smells, and boys. Who cares?
I feel like even if we had a tagline, people would still call it a perfume podcast. But that's okay. It's a gift. You know, once you give a gift away, you don't get to say what happens to it. So
that's the thing. This podcast, every Tuesday at midnight, it is no longer ours. It's yours for it you to yours. Do whatever you want with, as she said. So,
and sometimes I listen back and I think, why did I not get that in the edit? Like, why do I sound so annoying?
You are like in your feelings about last week's episode. What are you talking about? You sounded fine.
I don't know.
Right before it went up, or like when Sid was editing on Monday night, because I usually edit on Sundays and she edits on Mondays typically.
Yeah.
She's like, I sound so annoying. I'm like, what do you stop? Like, I like can't listen back with any sort of like judgment. You know what I mean? Like, yes, there are things that I will cut out because it's like, okay, Tynan, you sound stupid. But like, most of the time, I'm like, this is great.
There was like a lot that I cut out too.
I don't know. I love last week's episode.
I really enjoyed it too. I think I was just, when we were recording, I just remember feeling really like teehee. And then like the whole episode, I was like, there's way too much teehee in this.
You were very that, and I was like very manic. we were like not on the same wave at all, but it was still good. I love last week.
Well, we've had like a good run, I feel, of recording every week. And then I feel like when we skip like a week or two, sometimes we have more material, but then like when it's every week, it's just like, let me get into every detail of my life this whole week. And then I'm like, nobody needs that.
That's very you, but me, I feel like I pull back a lot more than you
do.
Like, you're things like, that I don't share.
Yeah, you're like really good at that. I'm not.
No, I mean, we are never want for material, to be clear, for better or worse.
True. I always wonder that with like people who do like professional weekly podcasts.
Yeah.
But I also think like maybe like some podcast formats are just like the waffling and that's what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get served a lot of TikToks of like podcasts and I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
I know. I even some that I listen to religiously that have a Patreon or this or that, I'm like, you bitches pay for this, please. But like Kirby and Sarah do twice a week.
That's crazy.
But the
and they have
different.
Like jobs too. That's
messy. I know. I know.
You cannot have a job and a crush at the same time. The same way I cannot have a job and a podcast at the same time.
It is all we can do to get this shit out once a week. I will say, really? If I was full-time freelance and when that inevitably happens again, mom, don't freak out. This podcast would be a lot different if we both had a little bit more.
I think so.
But you know what? I love where we're at right now and look at what we've done, including today. I'm gagged about today.
Today is such a momentous get for us. I feel like we've angling for this episode for ages.
Not to be like eat, pray, love, face ass, but...
face ass?
But like at the end of last year, I was like, I'm very like year-end mode right now. I'm feeling very that. But I was like, so much has happened to you this year that you have always wanted. But by the time it happened, you were already on to the next thing. Because oftentimes with what we do, there's a long lead. So it's like something cool will happen, but I'm already focused on my next deadline or my next project or the next guest for this show. And it's sort of like, oh yeah, cool, moving on. And I was trying to be like more present in my accomplishments or whatever the fuck, because I'm not great at like gassing myself. Mm. And then today I was like, bitch, you had like a Vogue piece this week and now Killian's on the show in the same week. Like, what in the hell? This is so cool.
Okay, let's have a moment to talk about Tynan's Vogue piece because...
Oh, we don't have to.
It was momentous. I literally was getting teary-eyed reading it. Like, no fucking joke. I'm not gassing you up. I was like emotional TM.
Wow.
And mostly I was just like, well, I know you are a prolific writer. And like, I've read your drafts, I've edited them, and I'm like, this is gold.
Yeah, but not of this one, though, to be clear.
I didn't read this draft, no. But the fact that I could see your thumbprints and your voice all over this piece, and it wasn't just like sanitized for the sake of like digital clickiness.
Yeah.
And it was like actually your voice, and Vogue ran it that way. I was like, I was so proud.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot coming. That means the most coming from you, actually. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that was great. I don't do like personal essays anymore, oftentimes, but I really wanted to write this. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if Vogue took it? And they did. I'm really grateful. And yeah, I mean, between you and I have every byline I want. You and I, the thousands of people that listen to this, I'm lucky to have like every byline I want. And there's not a lot that I'm really like chasing in the editorial space anymore. I'm very lucky to like still do it, but it's not what it was to me a while ago because I have other things I'm focused on now, but I still want to be there. And you know that I have been sort of struggling with the editorial SEO sanitization some things this year, which is very disheartening to me as a writer. And I know that things aren't exogene anymore. It's not 2013. Like, I get it. I'm well aware. But even when I think I'm writing to a publication, things still get sort of neutered. And I'm like, all right, like there's absolutely no point to this. I've been thinking a lot about that. So all that to say, it was really nice when the piece went up. Because also, to be frank, you know, Vogue is the only dick that'll suck in editorial these days, you know. I mean, to be very clear, I try to act like I'm too cool for anything, and like I you know, whatever, but it's like I will jump through hoops for a few editors and a few publications, and Vogue is one of them. But it was so cool to like see, sometimes not with Vogue, like sometimes you open a link when it goes live and it's like, well, let's see what this is.
Sometimes you don't get to see it. Many times I don't get to see the drafts that I write before they go live, and sometimes I'm like, oh, that's what you did.
right. And it's like, listen, we're writers. It's our job to like get at it. It's fine. It's never personal. You can't take it personally. But I was like, oh, fuck. Like, this is really what I wrote.
I know. Anyways, well, that's why, because I knew that. So I was like, yes. Like, it was, it felt like a win.
Yeah, it was. It was. It felt like a win to me, too. It was a really like nice way to end the year and everything. It was just really gratifying. So anyways, thank you. That means a lot. Anyway.
Yeah. I, too, struggle with the SEOization of like all beauty content. And I want to do more editorial because I still want to play in that field. But like the stuff I want to pitch is not the type of stuff anybody wants to print.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the stuff that I get assigned or get pitched, I'm like, I don't give a shit about like the history of facelifts or like why everyone's removing their fucking cheeks today. Like, I don't care.
Right. And, like, oh, was that?
Oh, yeah. I just feel like it's so reactionary. And then everything is like, what about this TikTok trend? And I'm like, first of all, they're not trends. They're these like micro moments that are over in a week. Like, let's stop conflating a bunch of TikTok videos for a trend.
Yeah,
exactly. Which annoys me.
Exactly.
And there's no, like, I don't want to say no, but I have yet to read many beauty editorial articles that have culture facing perspectives or nuance or like critical thinking. It's very commerce facing.
Very commerce facing. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well.
And the flip side of that, there are still very talented writers doing amazing
things. Oh, completely.
Things. Who was the girl that you put me on to? You like her stuff a lot.
What did she write?
She wrote like the Return of Party Girl Beauty.
Laura Pitcher.
She's doing great work.
Yeah, she always does really interesting stuff. And like, they're pretty well researched. She interviews a lot of people. And I feel like she delves a lot into like these little micro nuances that are born of social media. They're really well done. And she does the research to like look at the history and the ripples of things. And I think it's really interesting. Yeah, she's really cool.
So all that to say, there are still people doing it. But it's like, it's hard to place those pieces because it's not what... Unless it's a digital cover, you know, that's not where the value is put on anymore in terms of articles. It's like why people, we sound so fucking old when we talk like this, but it's like, it's like how people say like MTV never plays videos anymore. And, you know, MTV is like, that's because when you do, you don't watch them. So it's like, why would we do this? So it's like, I understand why things look the way they do online right now, because people have to get clicks, people have to make money, you know, but it's also like, oh, I want to read what you think about beauty, not, you know, a TikTok trend.
I saw this. Apparently, there's a new beauty magazine called System Beauty.
I heard about that.
That has, I like saw it in a Business of Fashion article, but I'm not paying $20 a month to read it. So I was just like, I read the headline on the deck and I was like, oh, that's interesting. But all the images kind of look just like V Magazine or some like arty fashion-y thing that, again, to me is still like fairly inaccessible and like same. So I was like, okay, so you'll run out of money in like a year, and then, right. and then that'll be another shuttered publication. But like, who's doing thoughtful beauty content? Help.
Right.
Help. Maybe we should do it. Maybe we should launch it. Not me giving myself another job.
Another job.
Another job to the several fake jobs that I have.
The end of 2002 is beating my ass.
Really?
Yes. Like, last week I couldn't move my neck. Now I can't breathe through my nose. I'm like, I'm not so sick. I'm barely sick. I'm just annoyed.
Yeah, being sick is very annoying. And like, everybody's out now. Everybody has the cold. The cold, like the one cold that's going around New York. And like, I want to go out too, but I'm like, don't get me sick. And I don't trust you. I don't trust you people. Every time I see a person coughing in public, I'm like, in this economy? Like,
yeah,
sir.
Exactly. Stay home.
Not covering your mouth and just coughing in the air? Like, what?
God. Fine.
Anyway, should we make a new beauty magazine? Dial one for Instagram. Maybe I'll pitch that to my agent. Who knows?
Maybe. We can dive right into it if you want.
Okay. Tynan, what do you smell like today?
So, if you are not already aware, because I'm not sure what kind of psychotic title Sable is going to give this episode, our guest today is huge bucket list vibes, huge North Star vibes. Our guest today is Killian.
Killian Hennessy.
So excited and honored to have him on the show today. I really can't believe I just like said that sentence out loud. I am fully excited. Anyway, so I was like, let me wear a Killian fragrance. They've sent me like half their collection lately, and I've been loving working my way through. I was going to wear Intoxicated, which you know is my absolute favorite, but I've talked about that ad nauseum. So I'm going to wear, it's like horny sister. So today I am wearing Killian, Killian Paris. They clocked us on the name. Killian Paris, Black Phantom, Memento Mori. So I think
that's a good one.
I know. I think it's just called Black Phantom. Have I talked about this on the show already? Okay, so the reason I love Intoxicated is because it is, to me, the most beautiful coffee fragrance ever. And this is another coffee fragrance with a heavy dose of rum and then a little bit of, apparently, cyanide. So I hope I don't die. But I like what rum does to a fragrance. I just don't personally like them on me. A lot of rum scents, I'm like, good for you, I'm gonna pass. This one, because it is so coffee forward, I do really like. And the rum makes it even richer and just super luxurious and caramelly and really beautiful. I'm looking at the site right now, and Killian only calls out rum, coffee, and cyanide. But if this can every like fragrance brand lay their website out a little bit more intuitively, if you jump over to Fragrantica, which we understand is not always completely accurate, they give you, in addition to rum and coffee, they give you dark chocolate and caramel, which I would say yes, sandalwood, which Killian also did call out somewhere, heliotrope, and almond. So this fragrance does oftentimes feel a little bit like a punch in the face in the best way. Like, it is bold, it's heady, it's sweet, but it's really warm and round. It's almost like stickier than it is sweet. It just feels like a hot cup of coffee, basically, with booze in it.
An Irish coffee.
I'm so congested, I can barely smell it. But I still prefer Intoxicated because that's my favorite. But this is a great second runner-up. But our first
those two like, are kind of like fraternal twins to me. Because they're similar, but not.
Right. Yeah. They definitely like grew up together, but they're very different.
What's interesting is when I smell them from the get, it's like when you first spray them, you're like, oh, these are similar. But then as you wear them, they go off in like different directions on the dry down.
Totally.
Which is interesting.
This one gets like teethier as you wear it. You know what I mean? There's allegedly no patchouli in it, but it is giving very much like a heavy dose of patchouli vibes in that it is really earthy.
Yeah.
And sort of coarse in a way that works.
Okay.
So I really like wearing this. It is not my like go-to, but I wore it a lot right before Thanksgiving because I had just sent and I was just really, it's one of those things that it's like, I really like this. I don't love it, but I am very interested in it. And I just want to like wear through it and figure it out. And I really enjoy it.
I love that one. I didn't know it had two names. I thought it was just Black Phantom.
So the hierarchy on the deco is Black Phantom in cursive by Killian.
Yeah.
And then below, it's Memento Mori in a sans serif, also in quotes, in italics.
Is that like a collection, maybe?
I don't believe so. And I hate to not have the answers to obvious questions such as this while we're recording, but
no, even on the website,
and I've looked, and I've looked.
Yeah, even on the website, it says like Black Phantom dash, and then in quotes, Memento Mori. So
yes, and they do this with a couple of their scents
that's
too.
Interesting.
I love it. It's great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Sable.
Mm-hmm.
What do you smell like today?
So in the same spirit of this episode, I also wore a Killian scent. I wore the first Killian scent that I was introduced to, which is Good Girl Gone Bad. And for the longest time, I was confused and thought this was the scent that Rihanna wore.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not.
But it's still very good. It's billed as like a narcotic floral, or like the website also says fruity floral, which I'm like, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's like a musky floral. Like it's very musky and a bit powdery. And then it has like the sweet nectar of, I think, tuberose, absolute, jasmine, and narcissus are like the big three in it.
Yes.
And then like everything else is just kind of like hazy and powdery and a little bit marshmallowy, if I do say so myself.
Mm-hmm.
This to me is like, it's just such an unabashedly like feminine scent. Or very, very girly, I should say. It's très, très féminine. It just feels very girly, but in a light, fluffy, playful way. Like, it doesn't take itself very seriously. So, it feels very plush and, like, pillowy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, when I first got it, I think it was, like, sometime when I was a lore. And I, like, put it on, and then I was, like... And everybody in the office was like, oh my gosh, that smells so good. What is that? And I was like, this isn't something I normally wear. Like, I don't really go for like very girly, florally scents, but it does make you feel good. Like, I feel really like, oh, like, I don't know. I just feel really good wearing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, sometimes it's nice to just like lean into that a bit. It's, I believe, like one of the most popular Killian scents.
Yeah.
It's got its own flanker. It's got an Eau Fraiche. I used to have the Eau Fraiche, I gave it away, but I do like the original better. It's just very, I don't know, it's very, very playful, very feminine, very, it does feel to me like very rich girl.
Yes.
Which I guess,
yes.
I mean, all Killian scents kind of do, because they're like $275 for like,
right.
Yeah, like they're not cheap, but oh, it's lovely. And it has a great trail. Like, again, whenever I wear it, everyone's like, oh my gosh, you smell amazing. I smell like a cloud, a fluffy cloud of girls. That's all I want to smell like, is a fluffy cloud of girls.
You do. You do. I wish that I liked this one more than I do, but...
I'm surprised you don't. It feels very up your alley.
You know how I feel about florals, though. And this one, I feel like I have smelled quite a bit of the Killian collection. Not all, but... The reason I love Killian is because when I think of them, I don't think of florals first. You know,
same.
Many, many perfume brands, I do. Killian speaks my same language, which I love, obviously. But yeah, this one is a little bit more floral than I prefer. It's gorgeous. I just don't, you know.
Yeah. I do really, really like Rolling in Love.
Yes.
Which I feel like is like the in-between of Good Girl Gone Bad and Love Don't Be Shy.
Yep.
It's like the weird little like Venn diagram sliver in between the two. And that one I think is a little bit more marshmallowy than floral.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe I'm coming around to florals. We'll see.
I'm not. I'm staying far away.
I like when they're mixed with like musky, powdery notes. I don't like when they're like crispy or I don't know. I don't like a fresh floral.
Well, I feel like you can add musk to anything and like it. You know what I mean?
That's true.
In a good
way.
That's
true. Yeah.
But like, can we just give it up one time for Love Don't Be Shy? I'm sorry. Like, that thing slaps. And I know like
that
I
is
said
so
before,
floral to me.
No, it is not. Yeah. It is all marshmallow. It's all marshmallow.
I get like hella florals from that.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
That's just me though.
Oh, I love it. And I thought with the Rihanna of it all this past year or two, I thought it was really going to go into Santal 33 territory. And I think it almost did, but I think it still stands on its own as like not played out, still really gorgeous, singular and fun. It's fucking fun.
It is fun. I mean, similarly, that one calls out neroli, orange blossom, and marshmallow. Mm-hmm. So it's got the same flowers. Well, yeah. similar vibe, different texture, maybe.
Love it. Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like all of Killian's, to me, when I think of Killian scents, I think of that plush, decadent overdose of sweetness and texture. Mm-hmm. They're all like very indulgent scents to me.
Yeah, indulgent is the word. I think of just warm, syrupy, indulgent, gourmand. Mm-hmm. I just love it. I'm so happy we're talking to him today. Should we get to it?
Yeah, we should. I want to say he like needs no introduction, but also like everybody needs an introduction. Killian Hennessy of the Hennessy Liquor Legacy and a perfume brand that we have spoken so much of on this podcast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, as Sable said, he's the heir to the Hennessy throne, or was, until he, you know, went out on his own. He
Meghan Markle.
He, as you will hear during the show, he was the fragrance director of Paco Rabanne, Alexander McQueen, and one more that I can't remember.
Giorgio Armani.
And helped create very iconic fragrances mm-hmm. from those houses until he just wanted to do his own thing. And thank God he did, because I, you know, his work with the other houses is strong, but nothing compares to what he's done for his own. So.
Yeah. So let's just get to it.
Let's do it.
Cool.
So my name is Killian Hennessy. I'm the founder and creative director of a brand named Killian Paris. And this morning, because I went to bed a little late yesterday, I needed something more refreshing. And I'm wearing Cologne Shield of Protection.
Ooh, lovely.
Ooh, okay.
That's a new one, isn't it?
I launched it in April, May this year.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah.
I haven't smelled
that one. Scent that I created during COVID.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
Nice.
And that's why it's called Shield of Protection. And that's why it's a cologne. I don't know if you know that, but you know, cologne in the 17th, 18th century was a way of protecting yourself from viruses. At that time, viruses were the plague, you know. Mm-hmm. But at that time, people were associating bad smell with death.
Right, right.
Because you had dead people and in the streets. And of course, that creates a bad smell. And a way for people to feel healthy, feel alive, was to smell good. And at that time, there was not a lot of ingredients available. The cologne, which is a combination of citrus notes with romarin. Romarin is rosemary. So rosemary is the keynote of any cologne. And you know, there is a famous cologne named L'Eau de Cologne de Hongrie, who was supposed to give eternal powers and eternal use to everyone who wear it. The myth says that the queen of Hungary married, when she was 70 years old, a young man of 25, because she was still beautiful as she was 25. So that's the myth. But the interesting thing is that I've been working on a cologne for a long time, actually, before finalizing mine. But I couldn't get there. I couldn't find a way of making it unique. And if I don't find a way to make a scent unique, I don't do it. For me, the most important, the task that I impose myself is really that none of my scent resemble any scent ever created on the market. And that by far the most important to me. And the cologne, I couldn't get there because the archetype is so squared, so precise that either I was moving out of the cologne and I could not call it cologne, or I was staying in the cologne and then I was like, yeah, I'm not bringing anything exciting. Mm. And I remember I got stuck during the first COVID in New York. And in June, July, when we were finally able to travel again, I took the first plane to Paris to go see my kids. And in the plane, I put my bags in the seat and I went immediately to the bathroom to wash my hands. Mm. And in the bathroom, they had this big bottle of Clarins Eau Dynamisante. It's a big red bottle in the Air Force flights. It's a cologne. And it's, you know, it's interesting how animal we are and how instinctive we can be. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I saw myself, I took this large bottle of Clarins and I was starting to wash my hands with it. And little by little, I was like spraying my neck and then I was putting under my shirt. I was literally bathing in cologne as if You know, I was exactly reacting like a man from the 18th century. I was like, Kilian, just splashing cologne. As long as you're shielded in your cologne, you're not going to get potentially anyone who has COVID in the plane. But, yeah. You know, I sat down in my seat and I was like, my God, the way I reacted, I cannot be the only one reacting like that. Mm-hmm. So I immediately texted my perfumer. I said, I'm in the lab tomorrow. We are finalizing my cologne. There's no way I'm going to be using another brand's cologne during the entire COVID.
Sure.
So, we finalized it in 3 months.
Wow.
Which is very fast for me.
It is. Yeah, that is really fast.
I want to circle back to something you just said. You said that when you're formulating a new scent, you don't want it to smell like, you know, anyone else's fragrance on the market. But we always hear, and we are saying time and time again, that there's truly like nothing new under the sun, whether it's, you know, in beauty, whether it's in fragrance or color or anything. So how do you do that for yourself? How do you satisfy that within yourself of creating something that feels new and fresh and exclusive to your brand?
Well, to be honest, first and foremost, you cannot break the rules if you don't know the rules. Mm. And that's something I learned from Alexander McQueen, because I work with Lee. You know, the real name of Alexander is Lee. Yeah. I work with Lee for 3 years, creating all his beauty brand. And I launched his first perfume called Kingdom with him. And after his death, there was a huge retrospective in London called Savage Beauty. Mm. And the first quote from Lee was, in order to break the rules, we need to know the rules. Hmm. And so that would be really the answer to your question, is like, there's so many people that arrive on in this industry with zero, zero knowledge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to be honest, the perfume knowledge is a Himalayan mountain. It's humongous. We have 3,000 notes to learn. And they have barbaric names, you know, hydroxycitronellal, aldehyde de cisfoxenol, neofluorol, salicylate de methyl. So, you know, those names, you just have to, or at one point, even like, understand the names, you have to remember those the notes. And then once you have that, you're only at starting point, because then you have to start to learn the accords. If you mix that note with that note, that creates an accord, what we call an accord in perfume. And an accord is what defines the personality of a perfume. If you take the accord of angel, and you can build whatever you want around it, it will always smell like angel in the air, no matter what. So you need to learn all the accords of all the perfume that have been done by the past. So it's a 10-year process, plain and simple. It's 10 years. So, and frankly, not everyone is willing to say, oh, I want to start a perfume line. Let me first do my classes. Let me learn the craft, and I'll launch the brand in 10 years once I'm ready. You know, nobody does that.
Yeah.
So that's why, I mean, I put myself in the place people who just start. The perfumer is presenting 2 or 3 options. They just only judge according to what they like. I like it. I don't like it. That's it. But it's a little simple, to be honest. You don't create a perfume just because you like it, you know? I think what we have to do, what customers expect from us, is really for us to bring them exciting products.
Yeah.
Wow. And you were fragrance director, correct me if I'm wrong, for both Paco Rabanne and Alexander McQueen before you started Kilian, correct?
Correct. And after Alexander, I worked for Giorgio Armani for 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. And how did you know? I guess you sort of just answered it, but how did you know it was time to break away from other brands and start your own?
Well, it's a very good question. Simply because I was actually ready to leave the perfume industry. Mm. When you look at my resume, I'm a pure perfume. I worked my thesis in college on perfume. I did a nose school. I worked for 9 years as a creative director, creating perfumes for fashion designers. I mean, I'm a perfume creator. You know, I'm like all the way. But at one point, I became very disillusioned. Is that a word?
That's a word. Yeah.
Disillusioned by the world of perfume. You know, it was too far from what I believed, what I thought perfume was. You know, when you start in any business, your point of reference is the decade that led into that moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you think, so it's going to freaking age me, but I started in the perfume industry in 1995. Mm-hmm. And the decade leading to me wanting to start perfume was 1985. And that decade is the greatest decade in the perfume world. It's in America, it's the birth of Calvin Klein. In the 1985, mm-hmm. it's Obsession. Then it's Escape. Mm-hmm. Then it's Eternity. Then it's CK1. You know, in Paris, in France, is Dior Fahrenheit and Dior Poison. It's all the fashion designers, the super creative, you know, Angel from Mugler, L'Odyssée yep. Miyake, Jean-Paul Gaultier, Le Male. You know, it's an explosion of creativity, the 85, 95. Mm-hmm. So obviously, for me, it was so interesting. But then 1995, 2005, for many reasons, it's the black hole of the perfume world, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to see a headhunter because I was not happy where I was, or like ready to move. And during the meeting with a headhunter, she tells me, you know, Kilian, after talking to you, I see you very well working in the fashion world. I see you getting along really well with Heidi Slimane. And Heidi was working at Dior. And I see you getting along very well with Tom Ford. And Tom Ford was at Gucci and mm-hmm. Saint Laurent. And I remember, I can still hear myself saying to the headhunter, okay, let's make the appointments happen, which made no sense. I mean, I had no fashion background. Frankly, it interests me not that much, but I was so craving for something else that I was ready to leave what really had taken over my life the last 10 years. And a few days later, I was having dinner at the Baccarat restaurant in Paris. It's a private house. And in the same floor as the restaurant is a tiny museum, the Baccarat Museum. Mm. And at that time, they were exhibiting one century of perfume Baccarat bottles. It's a tiny museum, but I stayed 2 hours touring and touring and touring. And, you know, I had seen all those old bottles and coffret in books, but it never really resonated within me at that time. But that night in the Baccarat building, I was just blown away. I mean, everything spoke to me. And I was like, but why couldn't customers deserve a brand where there would be that level of craftsmanship, that level of attention to detail, engraved bottles and names that would be playful and wood boxes with satin beddings of all colors and keys and tassels, you know? And the next day I gave my resignation at L'Oreal to build my brand.
I love that story.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't think if I had ever had dinner in the restaurant, maybe I would have never quit my friend. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. Wow. What
may have been. I like that you mentioned that you don't do a scent unless it's different and unique, because to me, like all of the Kilian scents are very distinct, very unique, and very recognizable anytime anybody wears them. And I'm wondering, like, how do you describe your philosophy when creating fragrances?
First, thank you for saying that, because that's really the best compliment you could ever give me. You know, to answer your question, that's one of the reasons why, like most of all niche perfume brands, I don't call my scents Patchouli something, Tuberose mm-hmm. something, Saint Santal something.
Right.
Because if I'm going to create a Santal, I could go 20 directions, you know? Mm-hmm. Do I want a sensual Santal? Do I want a clean Santal? Do I want a romantic Santal? Do I want a fresh Santal? Do I want a dirty Santal? You know, I could go a zillion directions.
Yeah.
So I need the same way a movie director needs a script to direct his actors and actresses. I need a script to direct my perfumer and work with him in the lab to try to come up with an emotion that has never been created before. And I find it much easier creating the emotion for than if I call it fleur d'oranger. You know, it's a fleur d'oranger, it's an orange blossom, but it's an orange blossom much more complex. If I don't have a name, if I don't have a script, I don't know where to go.
Do you always start with the names?
Always.
Ooh.
I don't That's even, yeah. how I love that.
Yeah.
But can you imagine a movie director choosing his actors and actresses without a script?
Well, I often hear like singer-songwriters talking about sometimes they'll write a song and then name it, but sometimes they will start with the name and work backwards and like work the song into that. So it's not unlike what you do.
Mm. Yeah.
Can you talk to us about sort of going off of what Sable said, this Killian philosophy? We both like work on the brand side of the industry and we know how important a name is to a product in so many aspects. And your names are so playful and sensual. And I feel like those reflect the perfumes. Can you just talk about how you are inspired in your naming conventions? Just how you go about naming your fragrances.
About the naming process?
Yeah.
You know, I write a lot. Every morning I write for myself. And in the writing process can be very different directions. It could be my own personal journal, be more philosophical questions that I want to discuss with my shrink, you know. But in the process, there's also moments where I like to play with words, because at the end, you don't have a lot of room on a bottle to say something. I have a notebook with a lot of names that are meaningful to me, that provoke an emotion. And sometimes I go back to my notebook and I read them again, and suddenly one name sticks out. And I'm like, oh, this really speaks to me today. What can I do with it? The tricky part is, can I make a scent out of it? Mm-hmm. And that's always a moment of truth. Names could be interesting, but I'm like, I don't know what... Nothing comes to my mind. Like what keynotes come to my mind? What ingredients am I going to give to the perfumer to start working on? If I cannot imagine the keynotes, then I'm not that interested anymore on the name. So it's a bit of a process. And then frankly, if you're on the side of the brand, you know, there is a third constraint, which is a horrible constraint, which is the legal constraint.
Right. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes.
You know, yes. And then you send it to legal and you're like, please tell me it's available, you know, and then legal comes and said, nope, cannot have it. And you just want to cry because you're like, I love that name so much, you know?
I know all about that.
Yeah.
Were there any names that you really, really wanted that legal was like, no, you can't?
Oh, yes. All the time.
I want to ask you about what happens when, you know, I know that Killian doesn't partner with celebrities all that often. I thought your French Montana partnership was very cool, but somewhat of a surprise. But back in, Sable, I believe it was 2020, we started seeing all these headlines about Rihanna saying that Killian was her favorite perfumer, or that made her favorite fragrance, Love Don't Be Shy. And then we couldn't get away from it for like 2 years. And I love that scent. But what is it like just from like a brand perspective and your perspective when you get endorsed, even though it may be hearsay, by one of the biggest women in the world, one of the biggest pop stars? Like, what does that do to a brand?
Well, it certainly does a little bit, but contrary to most of my competitors, I don't have one scent that has blown away and that represents 40, 50, sometimes 70 or 80% of the business of one brand. I don't have that. Love Don't Be Shy, for example, is 12% of my business at Sephora, but the same same amount as Princess, same amount as Angel Share, nothing more. So it does a little bit, but in my case, it doesn't make a huge difference. I would love to have one endorsement that blows the scent and suddenly there's a my business is tripling because of something like a celebrity endorsement, like it happened to some other niche perfume brands. It just, my business is very, I need a lot of scent just to get to 50%. I need 5 cents to get to 50%.
Wow. Okay. Huh.
The Rihanna effect debunked.
Right.
I think from the media side, we just would see all these articles about it. Like, this is Rihanna's perfume. And then you would see all of these TikToks and like Instagram posts about it. So the perception is that it's like one of the most popular scents.
No, it is. It is my number one. It is my number one, number two in the US, but I have other scents that do equally well.
Yeah. I think like Good Girl Gone Bad is also a big one, I think.
Yeah,
like
that's my number one. That's my number one in the world, number two in the US.
Oh, interesting.
But very little, you know, and this one that has zero endorsement and it's almost equal to Love Don't Be Shy. So it does a little bit. I cannot just say it doesn't, but not to the point of exploding my business.
Right. Do you find that certain names of fragrances like grab people before they even smell it?
No, I don't think so. I think people really judge by the scent itself. And then they get drawn to the name, you know, and then they play with the name. You know,
right.
I had an event yesterday at the boutique and, you know, they say, oh, I am the black sandal tonight. So I love the way they play, you know, with my names.
Yeah.
But what they say, I'm obsessed with that scent. You know, that's always the most important is that they are obsessed with the scent. And then when they are, it's interesting and fun and heartwarming to see them embodying the name.
I mean, speaking of names and rule breaking and convention breaking, the My Kind of Love collection, which I think is discontinued now. I feel like
except for Princess,
which is the best one. I feel like those names were really, really playful, really broke conventions. And I remember going to the launch party for that in like 2018. It was at like a hotel in the Lower East Side.
Yeah.
But what was the ideation behind that collection? Because I feel like that was the first time I saw a breakout Killian collection that was like totally different design, totally different attitude and bottles.
It was a collection that we partnered with Sephora on to launch the brand at Sephora. You know, my bottles are still sold at $265.
Yeah.
So it's not for everyone, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have since then created those 10 ml rollables. Mm-hmm. And 10 ml sprays that allow at least to wear the perfume for like maybe a few days, maybe a couple of weeks at a much lower price.
Right.
But the idea was to create a collection that would still be playful like the brand can be, but at a more affordable price. We recreated a bottle for Princess, which is inspired by the Love Don't Be Shy bottle, but it's completely black lacquered, but keeping with the gold, red and black color codes. And once we finally gave Princess back to Sephora, for the first few months, we were selling a bottle every 17 minutes.
Ooh, wow.
It was insane.
Wow. That is a really good scent. Yeah. Every time I wear it, everybody's asking me, what are you wearing? It's a good one.
So speaking of sort of capsule collections in that way, can you talk a little bit about the sellers and how, number one, I'm interested in how the sellers comes to life in its own collection rather than like in your core collection with the standard bottles and everything. And does the sellers collection have anything to do with your personal history and your family, or is it just more inspiration from somewhere else?
Are you talking about the sellers family or the liquors collection?
Sorry, the liquors collection.
The liquors.
That's what I figured.
Thank you.
No, don't worry. I know the brand is a little complex. Well, you know, when I joined the Estée Lauder Companies group, they told me, Killian, we want you to have total freedom to rethink the store design. Because when I was on my own, my store design was very simple. You know, I was thinking minimal investment because I simply didn't have the money to create something really outstanding. But when I joined, they told me really create the concept that you have in mind, the one that you always dreamed of. And I come up with this bar concept, this art deco, but an art deco from the 21st century built around the bar concept. And once we started to install the bar, it just became so obvious to me that in the bar, I need liquors. You know, I cannot have a bar without liquors. I mean, we're not in Saudi Arabia or Qatar, you know, we're selling water and orange juice.
Yeah.
So I need to have liquors. So I started thinking about the scents that I would want to create. And very quickly, I was like, I really feel the need to have a different bottle to hold my liquors. Mm. And at that time, I had already created the carafe. And if you look carefully, the K that is carved in the glass of the carafe is also the K that is carved in the glass of the liquor bottle. But we created it in a way that it looks like almost like a cognac glass or whiskey glass.
Yeah. Yes.
I love those bottles. They're so clever.
Yeah. Gorgeous. Yeah. Thank you. And obviously, once I committed to create liquor scent, then I had to create a cognac scent. You know, I mean, I could not have a cognac scent within the liquors. Mm-hmm. You know, just to tell you a story, it's funny because when I launched the brand 15 years ago, I launched the brand with 6 scents. And when I finished presenting the 6 scents to a journalist, usually the journalist would tell me, oh, I'm very surprised. There's no cognac perfume.
Mm.
because I knew, you know, I knew that the day I was going to create a cognac perfume, I'm going to have one chance.
Yeah.
To make it right.
Right.
And once I had the prototype of the bottle and it looked like a cognac glass and it was going to be on the bar, I was like, Kilian, this time, you know, pull up your sleeve. You're going to have to do it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it is my olfactive memory of the Hennessy cognac cellars. Mm. So it is very personal to me, but it was a challenge. I have to tell you, I put so much of me into that scent and energy. Right. But today is our fastest growing scent. It's already a number 2 and number 3 worldwide.
Wow. And this one is Angel Share.
Angel Share.
Angel Share. Correct.
Angel Share. Yeah, that is a really good one.
It's so good. Yeah,
for sure. That's the best one of that collection, I personally.
People go nuts for it.
Yeah.
That's the one you see really all over TikTok.
Yes. Absolutely. Do you have other scent memories from the past that have informed scents that you've created?
Yes, there is one. And I've been trying to get it for 15 years and very hard. My grandfather used to wear a perfume called Eau Sauvage from Dior.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Sauvage, the land today, because he was already dead. But the Eau Sauvage from 1966, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would meet him in the morning, he would be smoking his pipe drenched in Eau Sauvage. And there's this combination between the tobacco and the smoky pipe with the freshness of the citrus of that scent. And I've been dying to create a scent that would be the combination of the two. And I cannot get there.
Ooh.
Every couple of years, I tried. But, well, maybe in another 10 years. I don't know.
Okay, so speaking of like a 10-year time span, you said on the beginning of the show that, how did you say it? The previous decade always informs the next when it comes to perfume. I'm wondering how in this new era of direct-to-consumer fragrances and all these brands that you can't smell before you buy, and all these brands made by incubators and, you know, with the face of an influencer. And I'm not talking about any which one, but because there are so many. What is your take on the decade of fragrance that we're in right now with the onslaught of fragrance that is so much more prolific?
Well, to be honest, I'm happy with what's happening in the fragrance industry. You know, at one point, we saw the rise of makeup artist brands. And those were brands done by real makeup parties and not by marketing people in a desk that actually have very little knowledge about art makeup artistry. And that gave birth to Bobby Brown and Mark and, you know, all those great makeup brands. And then you had the rise of the doctor brands, you know?
Oh, yeah.
In skincare. Sure. And again, those are more professional brands. And I was very worried that it would never happen in the perfume world. But finally, starting in 1995, around that time, you know, you had Sertans and all those great brands that started to rise. And those were brands done by perfumers or creative directors that actually have a very strong knowledge about raw materials. Now, like everything, you know, when people see that a market is exploding, then everybody wants a share of the pie. So you see all these people coming in and they want taking a share of the pie. I think the market will clean itself naturally. It will auto-regulate. The best brands will survive. And those who have no real foundation will not last. So I'm not worried. I think it's a normal cycle. I'm just happy it happened.
Mm. That's a great answer. On that same tip, TikTok and fragrance. I know that that's something we get asked about a lot as writers. Just from your perspective, personally and as a brand, what does your fragrances being on TikTok mean?
Well, it's a way of building awareness or bringing awareness to one of my creations. So, you know, yesterday when I launched the brand, frankly, it was all magazines.
Yeah,
that's it. Magazines. So, you know, having a page in Vogue was the alpha and omega of everything.
Yeah.
Today, it's simply not. You know, I would much rather have a TikTok video going viral than having a double page in Vogue. You know, that's the nature of the game. You know, the world has to change drastically. So yeah. When I see TikTokers talking about the perfume and presenting it, whatever words they use, you know, in perfume, there's no wrong way of describing. It is what's meaningful to you. Mm-hmm. If you feel like Angel Share is fresh, fine. For me, it's not, but I don't care. Yeah. If you find it fresh, good for you. There's no wrong answer when it comes to perfume. It's what you feel when you wear it.
Totally. Right. Yeah. Right. I do feel also the few TikToks I've watched of people talk about Kilian fragrances, they always tend to go really hard into like how sexy and how sensual the scent is. And I think that's probably also in part due to, you know, the way it's branded and the names, of course. Like, what do you think makes your fragrances like sexy or sensual?
You know, I think it's interesting because I know people sing like that. And I don't have, you know, Black Phantom. I don't know if it's that sexy. I have a Good Girl Gone Bad, Going Straight to Heaven. You know, I have those, but it's not really the majority of my scents. But the reason why they do feel like that, I think it's simply the truth. Because I'm not the best person when it comes to clean and fresh perfume. I mean, I have a few that I personally love wearing. Customers don't seem to be coming to me for those kind of scents. When it comes to more floral notes, I don't like to work on clean and fresh flowers like a lily of the valley, a lilac, a peony. They're beautiful flowers, but I don't enjoy working them. I don't work those kind of flowers.
Right.
I like my roses to have the thorn. I like to work with tuberose and jasmine and narcissus and orange blossom. I like the more narcotic flowers.
Mm. Ooh, yeah.
When it comes to woods, I don't do the transparent woods and the clear woods. That's why my family is called cellars, because I like the darker woods, patchouli, vetiver, cedar wood. Those are my kind of woods. I have a smoky family. So I do enjoy working much better with notes that are more sexy, dry down notes.
Indulgent, sexier. Yeah.
Yeah. And more, so I think it's simply the truth. I think my portfolio of notes is a portfolio of what we call between us, like more sexy, more erotic notes.
Mm. That makes sense. Yeah. How do you decide which fragrances get like an Eau Fraiche or an extreme?
So there's not many extremes. I created an extreme for Good Girl Gone Bad because the scent is not, it's, for me, it's one of the chicest and most beautiful scent I have created. But it's a bouquet of flowers wrapped in a cocoon of white musk. So it stays a little close to you. I mean, you know, it's really for you and your partner, because I don't think a girl wants to be bad in public. You know, you only want to be bad with your partner in a more intimate way. And the world of perfume had changed 5 years later tremendously with perfumes very strong, very overpowerful. So I felt the need to give, in the Good Girl Gone Bad olfactive world, a scent that would still have the same personality, exactly the same formula, but adding a few ingredients that would bring the level of projection of the scent at the same level of where are the competitors today.
Okay.
But that's it. You know, I don't do many of the extreme. And the Eau Fraiche, I think it's a natural variation. You know, if you love a scent, sometimes during the months of June, July, August, you're happy to have like a fresher version of the perfume you like.
Right, right. That makes sense.
Yeah, because I have the Good Girl Gone Bad Eau Fraiche and Love Don't Be Shy Extreme.
Yeah.
And the Love Don't Be Shy one, they almost smell like two different fragrances to me, the original and the extreme.
Definitely.
It's interesting because the extreme came a bit as a fluke. I was working on a Middle Eastern version of Love Don't Be Shy because it's my number two in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Middle East, there's an ingredient called oud that they absolutely adore, which is a very strong, very animalic note. And in the region, the classic combination to mix oud is with roses. So rose and oud, it's the classic mix in the Middle East. So with the perfumer, we wanted to work on a Love Don't Be Shy for the Middle East, overdosing roses and oud. So in the lab, And at one point, we run out of wood. So we had one lab sample, which only had the overdose of roses with no wood. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away by what the roses brought to the composition.
Mm-hmm.
And the extreme, it's 98%, 97% the same formula with an overdose of natural rose. That's it.
Wow.
So you see how it's interesting how just one ingredient, you can feel that it's changing drastically a scent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel the same every time I develop a scent. Sometimes I change 0.1% of a formula mm-hmm. and suddenly the perfume clicks. It just moves in a way that becomes just perfect. 0.1%.
Wow. Because to me, the extreme feels so much like glassier from all of the rose, but
yeah.
It's such a small change. Wow.
I didn't know that collection was launched with Sephora. That is so interesting to me.
I know.
Because I know Sephora demands a lot of the brands it carries, and yeah. they will make you make brand new products and brand new product categories
completely.
Just to be in the store.
Well, you know what? Actually, I did think that it was sort of something to do with a Sephora exclusive, because I couldn't confirm it, but they had never been there before and they showed up with that. So it was like, it's giving Sephora, because like you said, they will make you play a game.
Yeah, they will. It will rob you blind.
You know,
but that's interesting. Yeah. And then they discontinued them. Womp womp.
Yeah.
I am still curious to smell those ones. Also, like, making a capsule collection just to launch in a store is like crazy to me. And part of me is like, oh, maybe that's why they kind of smelled a little bit similar to my memory. I might think differently if I smell them now, but who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it is a strong way to show up. Whatever. We don't have to deduce it. We've already talked about them.
Yeah, we already talked about them.
But yeah, I mean, I like it when I don't think I would ever have called Killian niche, especially since they're owned by Estee, but you know, I appreciate it when a well-loved fragrance brand shows up in Sephora, because it means more accessibility for more people. I mean, I know it's fucking capitalism, whatever, but I mean, we're allowed to have a little fun. And for people who don't live in a major metropolitan area, it helps them get their hands on, you know, the Rihanna scent that everyone had been talking about for forever. And now they get to experience it too. So I think that some people sort of look at it as a sellout vibe or whatever, but it's like, I don't think there's anything wrong with like bringing joy to more people through fragrance. So not to be queer about it, but
I feel like in beauty, like this concept of selling out, like doesn't really exist.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like once you've actually sold out, so.
Yeah. There's like no such thing as like gatekeeping with products, right. With products anyway. I don't know about like with like procedural mystery of like who got what done.
Oh,
like, I think people gatekeep that, but
totally.
Not when it's like the product I use or whatever. Yeah. So we may or may not have talked about an upcoming scent from Killian. We're very excited for it.
Yeah. If you're, I'm not even sure we can say that, Sable. If you're listening to this, that maybe you've gotten here that there are some things that we have strategically cut from this episode, but you will hear later.
Yes. I'm like, maybe we'll get the exclusive. Who cares? Anyway.
Well, we already have it.
That's true. That's true. The illegal exclusive.
We hold it hostage.
Anyway, we hope you enjoyed that episode. And thank you again for tuning in. You can find us at our website, smellyoulater.live. Follow us on Instagram at smellyoulater.mp3. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little review on Apple Podcasts. And I can be found on socials at Sabletooth Tigra.
I am at Tynan Buck.
And until next time, we will
smell you later.